2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is the grand champion of the NFBC main event. That would be Dylan White. What's going on, man? How are you? Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah, yes, if you celebrate. Happy Kwanzaa. There's a lot of holidays. I like it. It's fun. It's a great time of year. We're turning in the handbook soon. I'm going to shut up because I just like wanted you to talk. And then I was like, hey, I'm going to keep talking because I'm awkward.
I'm okay. It's starting to be winter here in Toronto. It's cold. It snowed kind of for the first time a couple days ago. And it's kind of stayed on the ground. But yeah, I know it's not like the storms you guys are seeing, but
what I would give for snow right now. Yeah, I have a monsoon in my basement, so I'm in between squeegee / sup pumping, so it's better than it was a few days ago where it was like I didn't sleep for 2 days while I just dealt with the water coming into my basement. But that's besides the point. We're here to talk about first baseman. We had our first base rankings come out this week. We've already released our catchers rankings and the top 50. The first base rankings were interesting because we had several players that ranked inside of the top 50 that are first basemen. That was certainly not the case when it came to catchers. There was only Adley Rutschman that ranked inside of the top 50, and that was it. So it was a little bit less heavy lifting in terms of knowing how the rankings came together. But overall, really an exciting group at the top. And I think there's a lot of sleepers. Like there, as I went through these rankings and kind of reviewed players again, and we did a lot of, you know, blurbs. Obviously, the later ones were what we had to spend our time on. I think I sort of came away like, wow, there's a lot of guys in this like 15 to 25 range who could have really good seasons that I find to be like, you know, really intriguing players. Even if they might be in like my corner infield spot or like my utility spot in a deeper league, like a 30 where I maybe don't have a typical, you know, corner infield, middle infield, additional like utility roles. But there's a lot of those guys. It's a good group. And I felt like when I was picking, and we'll have this coming out tomorrow, but when I was picking my targets and my sleepers, I felt like they were kind of like a messy breaking ball and they were kind of blending together a little bit. Is it a slider? Is it a curveball? I don't know. They're kind of both. I want to target all these guys.
I do agree. It was, I struggled. I kept changing. I'm going to pick this guy as a target. Maybe I'll pick this guy. I'll pick this guy. Like there are so many options to choose. I actually had a hard time finding a fade. I kept waffling on that, but yeah, no, I agree. Like the top five, like it's no real surprise. The top five first basemen are all kind of interchangeable for me. Like if I have, I don't think I'm giving away too much here, Matt Olson or Vladdy or Bryce or Freddie Freeman or Pete Alonso, if I have any of them, like, I'm not upset that I missed out. You can kind of mix and match how you want. They're all great OBP guys. They're all good power. They're all not going to hurt you in batting average, really. Maybe Pete Alonso's getting there, so he's probably the last of that.
He was a little unlucky, too.
Fair, exactly. Exactly.
I also think, like, when I look at these tiers, right, number one, you're not necessarily getting a complete player anywhere. Freddie Freeman, funny enough, might be the closest thing, and I do not anticipate he's going to repeat the 2020 season that he had last year. But, you know, when you get to Alonso, he's a good barrier after Freeman and Harper and Guerrero and Matt Olson, where you do have a little bit more balance of the hit tool with the big power. Alonso, I think, is a better player in OBP. He still, you know, has been impacted by that. I think some of it was a little bit unlucky. Some of it, I think, could be the park as well. But overall, I mean, I have Alonso in multiple dynasty leagues. He's certainly somebody that you can plug and play in terms of the power, but you do have to offset his average a little bit more, I think, in a way that you're not necessarily concerned with Freeman or Harper or Guerrero or Olson to the same extent. That being said, baseball is a funny thing and batting averages can climb by 20, 40, 60 points in a given season or you know, regress the same way. So we could be talking about Olsen the next year the same way we're talking about Alonso when you have a similar year. Probably not, but I think, you know, there's a possibility there. All these guys do provide, you know, top of the scale, top 50, you know, some of these guys top 25-ish sort of value. I think they're all, actually all five were in the top 26. So I think it's probably clear to say that we feel they all provide top 20-ish value. But then sort of the next tier, it's a younger group, maybe a little bit more risk-driven. But as I look through that group of like 6 to 10, and I won't throw all those names out there, but when I looked at that group, I felt like, all right, there's some guys here who could either kind of slide back in the coming years or slide forward, depending upon how their production goes over the next couple of seasons. But they all have the ability, you know, like a Tristan Casas to be a guy who maybe is a perennial top five first baseman. And he's not that far. We have him at six, so.
Yeah, no, I like the second tier is kind of the first tier, but just maybe 80 to 90% of it. Like you'll have like the Torques who are kind of like Alonso. So power maybe hurts a bit in batting average, but it's going to be putting up monster power. And then you have like 270 to 290 batting average with 25 home runs instead of, you know, 35 home runs from the top tier in like the Pasquantinos or Josh Naylor or even like Nathaniel Lowe, a bit lower. So yeah, it's you're not real. You are stepping down, of course, but it's not like it's suddenly a desert. You just have sort of the a reduced amount of production from that second tier. And I'd be happy with any of them. Like I like all those guys. They can all take a step forward. Even the guys that are a bit older, like Goldschmidt or Christian Walker, they're good for 25 to 30 home runs probably, and they could probably not going to fall off the cliff this year, even though they're in their 30s. So they're probably, you know, quote unquote safe, as an option there too. So I do like that. I was surprised at how kind of deep first base was. I thought once you get past the top tier, it's kind of a desert and it's not at all. It's solid players all the way down. Like even the top 20, they're all people I'd happily have as first base.
Yeah. And that was kind of my next point is as you get down further into this tier, there's only one prospect that we have ranked within the top 25, or I guess technically two, because Nolan Schanuel is technically a prospect, just barely, as funny as it is to say that. Never would have thought that a year ago. But it's Kyle Manzardo, who we have at 17. And I just think that, you know, in the neighborhood of the players that he's around, Andrew Vaughn, maybe Aries Hoskins, Orion Mountcastle, Kirilloff, guys like this, it wouldn't be shocking if Manzardo gets the reins, gets the opportunity to, you know, see 500 plate appearances, whatever that means, if it's up late in April or early in May. It would be shocking for him to have similar returns to those guys at that position, just from a redraft standpoint even. So, I don't think it's taking a huge leap. The other thing is there's just a general lack of first base only prospects. Cause as we say with second baseman, we'll probably say it a little bit with third baseman, they're simply playing other positions right now. And some of them might've actually been playing catcher and been ranked in the catcher rankings. and we'll see how some of those guys maybe translate as catchers and maybe move off the position of first base. There's never a lack of talent at first base because there's a standard in terms of offensive production that you need to withhold to play that position.
Yeah. And I think Manzardo is going to reach that. He may not do it this year, like you're saying. But I do like him. He's only 23, I believe, heading into this season, like his age 23 season. So he's only going to improve over the next 4 years, assuming, you know, a prime around 27 years old. So he, you know, has an advantage over like Nathaniel Lowe, who's, you know, 28. So he's on the sort of decline phase in quotes of first base. So you got Manzardo's better years, best years ahead of him. And he may even have full-time playing time this year, like you said. So he's someone I like. I know his struggles last year in the minors, probably some attributable reasons externally. So I'm not taking it at face value that, you know, this is his talent has dropped off because he was such a great name in 2022, popping up everywhere. And now with the Guardians, he's going to have, you know, probably a full-time role. somehow with Josh Naylor, they'll figure that out to maybe put Naylor DH. I know there was some talk about trading him. I don't know if they're going to trade him, not with his brother on the team as well. Yeah. I just can't see them doing it. And Josh Naylor has been great the last couple of years. He's still 27-ish as well. So he's at peak value right now for them. So, and I know the Guardians need power in that lineup. So I'm very interested to see how the Naylor-Manzardo thing works out. I'm sure it'll work out very well. And, they'll get 20 to 25 home runs from both of them for a long time.
That would certainly be nice to see. Next thing I wanted to bring up to you here, Dylan, are there any players, within this top 50, beyond targets, but guys that, maybe have that sleeper or target value, but somebody that you're kind of excited to roster this year, maybe you already have them in Dynasty League, somebody you're targeting in trade, or, potentially someone you're going to draft heavily in redraft?
I kind of like Anthony Rizzo for this year in redraft. I think when I was writing up the skinnies, take a step back as a sidebar. I just want to say how like having to do these deep dives is really helping me for redraft, because I'm really seeing like the nuggets of what they did in their season and where they are in their career path. And I'm really learning a lot. It's really helping me for my prep if I do redraft. And the Anthony Rizzo one, going back to that, there's such a clear delineation of like before his concussion injury, when he bumped into Fernando Tatis on May 28th, before and after. Like before, he was just crushing it, 11 home runs, and it was like 300 batting average. It was just like off the charts. And I had him in a couple leagues, and I was very happy about that. And then just tailed off and had horrible second half. It was like a 45 WRC plus, or not even second half, just from May 28th on to when his season ended in August. It was just absolutely horrendous. And so when projection systems account for that, they're just going to look at, oh, he had a whatever was WRC plus for the year, and it was his most recent year. And so like he's, in the tail end of his career at age 34, and they're going to ding him. But I really think that second half is not true, in quotes. I think he is going to get unfairly dinged by projection systems, and I think he's going to surpass the expectation production wise, assuming he's fully healthy. And that's all signs seem to say that he is going to be fully ready at the beginning of the season. Aaron Boone was saying that. Of course, he is going to say that. What else is he going to say? But I kind of believe it. I think he'll be fine. And I expect him to just kind of be back to, the Anthony Rizzo he was in 2022 and in the beginning of 2023. So that's my sleeper for redraft is Anthony Rizzo. Age 34, Anthony Rizzo. So maybe not a dynasty asset, but I think in 2024, he's going to, surpass the projections for him.
Nice. I like that. I got a little bit more of a risky one, I suppose. And we have him a little bit further down in the top 20, but Rhys Hoskins, who's a free agent. So we don't know necessarily where he's going to end up landing. Productive player, certainly would have been somebody that if he was back in Philly and had a healthy year, I think would have been targeted pretty heavily. I have a feeling that the value, or just in terms of where his numbers are going to be in terms of ADP, are probably going to be at a point where I'm going to be very interested and potentially targeting him. I think same, right now with this trade window, I mean, there's still some risk that he can end up in a poor park. But there's chances that he doesn't. And I think he could fit in with a lot of teams. It's probably going to be a competing team that would go after him, but we'll see. Good on base skills. We know what the power is and what the upside is. And there's not a terribly awful history of players coming back from missing an entire season and then being really productive the next year. Sarah Langs actually wrote an awesome article. I think it was yesterday. At MLB.com, and she kind of listed off, using Hoskins as the inspiration, some other notable names that came back and had great seasons. 2011 Jacoby Ellsbury with the Red Sox, 2005 Richie Sexton with the Mariners, 2002 Nomar Garcia-Para, 2000 Moises Alou, 1995 Ron Gant. So definitely like some names that you can go back on and remember some guys there. But overall, I thought it was an interesting point because it's not often that we see a star player miss an entire year and then come back and he's facing free agency. So that kind of murkies the waters a little bit more. But I do feel like he could be a bit of a value on draft day or as a trade target right now of somebody that, you know, just in terms of rankings and where he falls in this first base group, it's a matter of pick him, how he's ranked. But, you know, I don't think it's absurd to think that he could have a top 10 first base season next year pretty easily. And he's not all that old. I think he's 30 years old. So there's still a few years left, especially as a first baseman. We'll see how the knee injury impacts him. But because it was so early in spring training, he's going to have pretty close to a full year in terms of recovery before that.
Yeah, I mean, there was talk that he might make it for the postseason for the Phillies. Obviously, yeah. He didn't, but yeah, I mean, he's basically ready to go, in my opinion. I saw some reports that the Jays were interested potentially at Rhys Hoskins, same Justin Turner as well, and JD Martinez. It's kind of weird that these sort of right-handed DH slash maybe first base.
Vlad is thin now. He's playing first base. He's moving to third. He's going back to third. That's what's happening.
Put him in center. And yeah, I did just think it's weird. It's like we have these right-handed sluggers, but having Rhys Hoskins in that Jays lineup would be pretty interesting. I think you'd probably be happy with that if you traded for Rhys Hoskins.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that would be a potentially perfect fit. So yeah, that would be an interesting one for sure. We'll see where he lands, but he is definitely somebody that I think I'm going to be targeting. As well as Spencer Steer. When I did the deep dive on Spencer Steer, and I don't know if you felt the same way, I came away feeling like this is definitely, he was a good prospect. The underlying data was always good. I think he was a top 100-ish guy for me. Like, I believe. I'm like, I'm buying back in, you know. Plate skills are really good. The contact is really solid, good angles. There's enough power there, especially when you're playing, you know, half your games in the gab. We have him in the teens, and I'm like, you know, there's some guys ahead of him. I think I might read the roster. The more I dug in on Steer, the more I was into it. And he's unusual because he is a smaller, shorter guy, sub 6 foot guy, and, you know, really more of like a prototypical second baseman looking type. Does play a few different positions, so depending upon what your eligibility limits are from the previous season in terms of how many games a player has to have there, he might qualify at quite a few. So there's some value there as well. I'm a big Spencer Steer guy here.
Yeah, no, I totally make sense. It is the multi-position eligibility is the huge selling feature for me, because if he doesn't cut it, just say he doesn't repeat what he did last year, which was excellent production. You put him at second, put him in the outfield, and he's going to be a productive player. So he has a huge kind of fantasy floor, even if he doesn't hit his production from last year. So like that is definitely helpful. And what I learned last year in the main event is like having the position eligibility is, I think it's worth way more than, you know, sort of the going rate is. Yep. Just having that flexibility, having Mookie Betts have second and short and outfield, it just opens up so many worlds of possibilities. You can always kind of optimize your lineup with little effort. You don't have to like really figure out how you can, who you're going to drop, who you're going to pick up week to week, because, you know, you have so much flexibility. So I think just that. So the Ha-Sung Kim, Spencer Steers, those guys are actually much more valuable than even the production is saying they are. I the one thing I'm a bit concerned about, but I think he's going to, you know, come out of that unscathed, is the how the playing time is going to shake out in Cincy with all the people they have. John Candelario being signed. And I mean, there's talk of trading Jonathan India and, you know, Joey Votto's not coming back, but Christian Encarnacion Strand and Noel V. Marte and Ellie De La Cruz and all the outfielders they have, Fraley, Benson, etc. It's just like, where is he going to play? I do think he is sort of the cut above in terms of safety. Spencer Steer is. Yeah. So I think it'll be okay, but it's just, there's a lot of questions with Cincinnati that's kind of scaring me in general for all those guys. But like I said, I think Steer's going to come out of that unscathed.
It might just be a bit of a hot potato situation where, you know, you just keep Pat, like it's just whoever gets stuck with the bag, you know, little game of musical chairs where there's just somebody that's on the outside, but there's going to be so much production potentially from that lineup again this year, that I'm definitely not scared of rostering Cincinnati players. But it is a question outside of guys like, you know, maybe McLean and Ellie, you know, who's going to play where and how much playing time they're going to get. I really like Noel V. Marte. I would say I'm pretty much on all of the Reds players. Christian Encarnacion strain is very scoring dependent for me. I don't know if it's the same for you, where if you know, it's an OBP league, I'm a little bit more bearish with Encarnacion strain, where if it's a batting average league, I think I'm probably a little bit more bullish and a little bit more willing to go after that. Because I think that while there's could be some variance with that style of hitter that is an aggressive swinger, the batting average has a higher ceiling, you know, than your typical like swing and miss guy who maybe walks quite a bit but has the big power, who you would target in an OBP league, offsets a little bit. So he's sort of like the reverse of the typical like OBP boost Kyle Schwarber type of guy.
Yeah, no, very, very good point. It's funny you bring up Encarnacion Strand as someone that it's hard to rank, I guess, depending on your league format. I had him much higher, and then after Candelario got signed, I dropped him a lot just because it's not clear for me if he's going to have the playing time. And I think just the fact that he chases so much, he is way more susceptible to slumps. And because they have so many options, it'll be, like you said, the hot potato who's the hot hand. And I think he has a higher chance of, you know, having a slump and then, you know, being benched for a while than Spencer Steer, who doesn't chase much at all. Like, he's going to have that high floor. He's going to always be, like, if he's not producing, it's probably BABIP related because he's swinging at good pitches and they're just not falling, as opposed to he's looking like he's flailing at pitches on the outside or something like that. So just yeah. more on Spencer Steer, more arrows up for Spencer Steer. Now I'm kind of maybe regretting my rank.
Well, there you go. One last thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap this show up. Who's a sleeper who's a little bit deeper down here? It can even be a prospect. We do have a few that are ranked, but who's somebody here that, you know, is maybe outside the top 25, maybe because of function, but somebody that you maybe like long-term?
Oh, that's a very good question. I had someone asked me where Abimelech Ortiz was because it wasn't in the R50, and I said it was just outside. And I said, so yeah, interesting. He didn't make the 50. Who did? And Nathan Martorella we have, and I've always liked Nathan Martorella. I think you had him as a sleeper a couple of years ago or last year as well. Just his data has always been good in terms of the contact and the contact quality. Great makeup. The Padres really like him. And the Padres have had some good, you know, Graham Pauly and Jacob Marcy have kind of popped up. And I think Martorella's kind of been kind of forgotten in that, but I like him almost as much as those other two. I think he's a guy that we have him the back of the 50. I think he's a sneaky one that's kind of maybe some of the luster has come off. And maybe that's a target to go after, because I think he's going to take another step forward, and then I think he's going to be part of the Padres' plans for a while, starting in maybe 2025.
Yeah, and, you know, some of it, too, is just looking at, you know, tool grades and, you know, the sort of work that we do behind the scenes for the handbook. By the way, place your handbook orders. That is going to press on Friday. So we are pretty much done. We're doing our last proofs right now. Everything's written, ready to be shipped out. So we kind of are able to fold some of those grades in there. And I just think there's a lot more doubt on the hit tool as Ortiz moves up versus some of these other guys. One name that I was going to throw out there was Ryan Clifford with the Mets. Was an 11th rounder by the Astros last year as part of that Justin Verlander return alongside Drew Gilbert, who's a good prospect in his own right. I really like Clifford's combination of approach, top end power. I think you can project pretty easily 70 power here. This could be a 30 home run guy annually. And as the hit tool progresses and it's not too bad, there's a chance that, you know, the batting average floor, you know, isn't a negative. And I think that's a big thing when we're talking about some of these first base power prospects. He's also an outfielder, so he has multi-position eligibility. We'll see what he's developed as and what he sees time as. I think ultimately a lot of people think he ends up at first base, though, but he has the bat for it. He's a really interesting one for me, and somebody that just, you know, as a throw-in and a bigger deal, a throwback draft, or a startup dynasty league, I definitely will probably have a few shares of Ryan Clifford.
Yeah, I definitely like that name. I have my peak projections, whatever, have him at like 28 home runs. The 90th percentile exit velocity was, I think, 107 or something like that. So, you know, nice pop, good barrel rates, doesn't chase that much. And his contact is basically average too. So always like that.
There we have it. I think we can wrap a little bow on this. Perfect first base show to send you into the holidays. Dylan, anything you want to say to the people before we wrap this up? I don't know if this is... No, we'll record one more show before the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah. We got the second base coming out after everyone's had their Christmas dinner and are playing with their new Xbox or whatever it is. They have a second base list that they can read on Boxing Day. So we'll do another podcast before the end of the year.
There we go. All right. Well, this has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.